good afternoon to you, Namibia, and welcome to On The Reader Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, here to keep you company up until 14:30. Now, it's Tuesday, the 12th of August, 2025, a day the world pauses to celebrate International Youth Day. But here in Namibia, it's more than a celebration. It's a recognition of the power, creativity, and resilience of our young people bring to every corner of this nation. From the fishing docks of Walvis Bay to the cattle posts of Omaheke, from Katima Murilo's riverbanks to the high streets of Windhoek, today's spotlight is on the youth, their involvement, their innovations, and their contributions to building the Namibia of tomorrow. Now, whether they are leading community projects, shaping cultural conversations, driving change in classrooms, or breaking ground in business, young Namibians are not just the leaders of the future, they are the leaders right now. Now, on this International Youth Day, we'll hear directly from them their ambitions, their challenges, and their visions for a better Namibia. Because this conversation isn't just about youth visibility, it's about youth viability, as I always say. So whether you're in a taxi, at your desk, out in the field, or relaxing in the afternoon sun, stay locked in, stream us live on Eagle FM app or website, and join the conversation on WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This is On The Radar, where Namibia's power, policy, and people meet unfiltered. Let's get right into it. Today, 12th of August, marks International Youth Day, and in Namibia, young people gathered at the Yetuyama Namcol Center to mark the occasion under the theme, Local Youth Action for SDGs and Beyond, or let me rather say Sustainable Development Goals and Beyond. Now, the theme highlights the role of youth in advancing the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, not just as beneficiaries of change, but as creative drivers of it. Now, the event brought together students, young professionals, community leaders, and youth organizations to showcase how young Namibians are tackling issues such as climate change, gender equality, quality education, and economic opportunity. It also brought together different types of youth from all 13 regions of Namibia. Now, workshops, panel discussions, and cultural performances filled the day, offering a platform for the youth to engage directly with decision makers. Their message to national and local leaders was clear. Inclusion in policy making just must go beyond symbolic gestures. Now, youth people want to see their ideas, innovations, and lived experiences reflected in national strategies, especially when it comes to job creation, rural development, and equitable access to resources. Now, as the celebrations unfold, one question resonates across conversations. What tangible commitments will leaders make to ensure youth voices shape the Namibia of tomorrow? And are the youth themselves ready to take up positions should they be offered to them? Now, speaking at the event is Erica Goldson, who is an UNPF leader. Let's take a listen to what she had to say.
It also serves as an important platform to promote young engagement, youth engagement, and celebrate their contribution to society, development, and peace. So according to the results of the 2023 Population Housing Census here in Namibia, it's saying that Namibia has a very youthful population. 71% of the population in Namibia is under 35. And we see this as a very unique opportunity. For us at UNFPA, we refer to this as the demographic dividend. And this means that if we, the government, invest in your education, skills, development, in your health, you will be able to drive innovation, boost the economy, and build a more prosperous future for everyone. So there's a lot of responsibilities on your shoulders as young people. But if we do not give you all the right opportunities, this great potential can instead become a challenge with more unemployment, issues around poverty, instead of progress. As our director of ceremony mentioned, the theme for this year is Local Actions for the SDG and beyond. And this team embodies the very essence of the demographic dividend. It recognizes that young people are not merely beneficiaries of development, but are active agents of change. So, as I mentioned, big responsibilities on your shoulder. You are innovators, you are leaders. And this team also acknowledges the need for youth inclusion in local governance processes, as your creativity, your energy, and your community knowledge are essential for addressing the complex and interconnected challenges of our times. Many young people are committed to a better world and are stepping up as powerful leaders and agents of change at all levels, and I've seen that since I've been here in Namibia. I'm very impressed with what I've seen young people have been doing here in Namibia. Being the closest to the communities, you serve and in a unique position to create inclusive policy, allocate resources, and establish mechanisms for youth participation in local planning and decision making. It is important that we integrate youth priorities into local and regional strategies and foster partnerships with youth organizations, and communities can also collaborate with young people to turn their ideas into impactful solutions. We all know that young people are leading action and driving innovation to address challenges like climate change, persistent gender inequalities at global, regional, and local levels. Most young men and women reject violence and instability. Many are proactively involved in building and sustaining peace. Young women facing insecurity and gender inequality are ensuring that ending sexual and gender-based violence at the forefront of peace-building efforts. At UNFPA, United Nations Population Fund, we are committed to achieving universal access to sexual and reproductive health and rights, ending gender-based violence, eliminating harmful practices, and ensuring that no one is left behind, especially young people like yourself. We've heard from the director of ceremony, he spoke about the SDGs and the importance of it, and I really just want to commend Caroline for sharing her most favorite SDG. But for us at UNFPA, while we contribute to 70 SDGs in the work that we're doing, we especially focus on goal 3, that speaks to good health and well-being, goal 4, quality education, goal 5, gender equality. But we also contribute to the national priorities of Namibia. So in terms of 6 pillars of SDG 6, I just want to highlight pillar 1, economic growth, transformation and resilience, pillar 2, human development and community resilience, and pillar 4, effective governance and public service delivery are very much central to our mission. And young people are key to making these goals a reality at local level in Namibia. The digital revolution offers unprecedented opportunities for young people like yourself to become innovators, entrepreneurs, and leaders on the global stage. By leveraging digital technology, we can create more inclusive and sustainable economic growth, ensure access to quality education and healthcare, and empower young people to actively participate in shaping the future of our nation. The views and voices of you, the young people of Namibia, are critical to building a more equitable, sustainable, and peaceful world. As your understanding is much better than us in terms of the needs and local realities of the future generations. So on today, International Youth Day, let us reaffirm our commitment to young people, not just as beneficiaries of development, but as co-creators of a sustainable, equitable, and just world. The path to achieving the SDGs runs through the lives, leadership, and local action of you, young people in Namibia. Thank you so much.
And there you had it from UNFPA representative, that is Erica Goldson, speaking at the commemoration event of International Youth Day today. Now, of course, let's take a listen to the Deputy Minister of Education and Youth Sports Arts and Culture, also abbreviated as MESAC, Dino Baloti, who spoke about being a youth is a state of mind. Let's take a listen.
So this is my ambition, even though we don't have the same name. And I want a young person to sit at the high table. I think it's very important. Let's give another round of applause. So, as you know, I'm a politician, and politicians need to give salutation. But I'm going to ask for forgiveness and not permission to not stand on any this morning. I'm just going to greet my young people once, twice, even three times. Good morning, young people. I prepared some few notes, but I want to emphasize that this is not a speech. Is that fair? I can't speak off the cuff, but there's many cameras here. We don't want to be misquoted. But I'm not giving a speech. That should be made very clear. So the first thing that I want to share, and I know my commissioner is also here in attendance, has been acknowledged, is that as leaders, I almost want to demand that we eat last. And I want you to pay attention, especially the young people. As leaders, I want us to lead by example. And I look forward to attending events in the future where leaders and young people eat the same food at the same table. And that's why I've also called my ambushe to the high table, because I want the equal representation. That's what we demand. It should not be a rhetoric. It should not be what we just speak about. We want to see it through our actions. So today is a day to speak to young people, to my constituents. And I want to speak to you all with the utmost sincerity. My remarks, as mentioned, will not be a speech, and I can only hope that it will resonate with even just a few of you. But equally, I hope that it motivates even just one or two. And most importantly, I ensure, or I hope, to be genuine throughout these few remarks. And it will not be a long speech, I assure you. And so when we speak about leaders eat last, we also speak about the very simple things, such as your attire. Now, I think as leaders, it might be a little bit confusing to see everyone outside of suits. But here and there, we can also incorporate techies. Is that fair? Here and there, we can also wear t-shirts instead of shirts and ties. Is that fair? When we walked this morning, I was very intentional about walking with the young people. And it reminded me a few months ago when we went to Okahanya and we walked in solidarity with the community for the loss of the three young women or young girls in Okahanya. And the protocols team said, "Dino, you cannot walk because they're serving you the petition." I said, "But I stand in solidarity." And so again, sometimes it's needed to not ask for permission, but just ask for forgiveness. I want to repeat, or I want to echo, that being young is a state of mind. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a retired youth, recently retired. You can only be a youth up to 35. We have senior youth, retired youth, upper youth. We're creating all these nice youthful words. But I am a retired youth. And my colleague Sunday, who's sitting in the stand over there, I want to quote something that he says, and I always love when he says it. It's good to be a child, but it's bad to remain a child. And as a recently retired youth, I now feel confident to address you today. So I want to start by sharing some very notable young honorables in Namibia. I think we should all be aware of Honorable Feni Tushavi, 22-year-old Member of Parliament. We have Honorable No, wait, there's five to clap. Let's clap after the five. Honorable Patience Masua, who's today 26, but when she entered Parliament, she entered at 22. Emma Teal Phillips, today, I'm now giving all the ages, but you can Google it also. Today 29, but when she entered Parliament at 23. Utara Mutu, today 29, entered Parliament at 24. And Ina Hengari, also today 29, but entered Parliament of the National Assembly at the age of 24. And I thought I need to mention my brother, even though he's not too young. It's Honorable George Kambala, who today is 33 years old, so he still technically qualifies as a youth. And he's a member of, there are too many women. We had to also bring a guy in there. So obviously that representation is a little bit skewed. But as I was sitting, I was Googling some prominent world leaders, youthful world leaders. There's only a few that I want to note or share. So there's someone by the name, well, someone you need to respect him, he's the Prime Minister. Gabriel Attal of France, who's 34 years old as the Prime Minister. Ibrahim Traore, I think we all seen him on our socials. You can clap for Ibrahim. And he's 37 years old. Daniel Noboa, the president of Ecuador, 37 years old. And maybe the last one or two I'm going to share is Kristján Frostadóttir, Prime Minister of Iceland, 36 years old. And I think for a Namibian context, let's take Honorable Emma Teofilis, who was the youngest deputy minister at the age of 23, if I'm not mistaken. I also want to make mention to another Namibian, Tanya Deringo. She earned the Queen's Young Leader Award, a most prestigious international accolade, in 2015 at only 23 years of age. And so you might ask me, do you know why you're sharing all these young people's ages? We need to be inspired by fellow youth to take up leadership positions. Being a leader is to eat last. And being a leader is to sacrifice and to serve. That's the ethos of being a leader. Let's give all those young Namibians a round of applause.
And as you heard over the Deputy Minister of Youth, Sports and Culture, Dino Baloti, speaking about young people in Namibia who at a very young age became leaders, and that's emphasis that he wants to play or to push or and to put and to place on the hearts of many young people today, that they should take up space and become leaders. It's not something that is impossible, hence why you see him bringing out some names. And I appreciate how he didn't just go and bring out names from outside Namibia, but right here from the very land of the brave. You, the young Namibian who is perhaps in Ketmanshoop, Katimamururu, in Onga village, Ohalushu, Ondangwa, Ohangwena, Omdaungilo, wherever you're finding yourself, whether in Karkas, just know that you ought to take up your rightful place as a youth. When you talk about youth inclusion, it also requires the youth on their end to come forth and be on the table and speak to the right people and talk about their ideas, their innovations. And when opportunities have been made available to them, they have to do it themselves. One thing I do take note of is a young person who also spoke about today, who spoke about, are we the young people really ready? If opportunities are given unto us, are we preparing ourselves in our closets, back it where nobody can see you? Are you preparing yourself? Should the opportunity and the spotlight be shown on you tomorrow? Are you ready? Should you be given the mic to speak about what it is that you are ready to do, or what it is that you want youth to be included in? Let's continue to take a listen.
So when I woke up this morning, deciding to wear techies, I asked myself, if I was to fully immerse or put myself in the shoes of young people today, what would they want to hear? And I asked a group of young ladies that I'll mention shortly. And some of the feedback that I received is they would want to feel empowered. They would want to feel heard. They would want to feel fought for. They would also want to feel inspired and motivated. But most importantly, they would want to be proudly Namibian. Is that fair?
Deputy Minister Dino Baloti also gave an example of a young youth, Melissa, who defied all odds and who had a learning difficulty, but still went on to pursue her dream of continuing and graduating from the University of Namibia and went on to work at the UN. Let's take a listen to that.
I want people to know that as a caring government, almost 10 billion Namibian dollars has been allocated to young people. And so the first one is the allocated apprenticeship of just over 2 billion. The 3 billion allocated to internships, there is a difference. 1 billion allocated to industrial renovations. And just over 400 million allocated to youth multi-purpose centers. I'm not even speaking about the recently launched National Youth Fund, which was capacitated at just over 257 million. I do not qualify for that fund, only someone under the age of 35. And the big difference between that fund and any other fund is that no collateral is required. So with your quality business plan, with your great idea, you can approach commercial banks as young people, and they won't ask for your 10 or 20% collateral to secure some of those loans. Now, I want to call up, before I call up Comrade Amotenya, before, I want to call up my colleague Sunday, and I didn't give you notice, so now you're on the spot. But I want you to bring with the young lady, Melissa. So if the DJ still has my song, you can put the song back up while you come Sunday with Melissa. Don't come alone. The purpose of calling Sunday to the stage, I want this to motivate our school-going young people. Because we need to leave here today feeling inspired. Sunday, the floor is yours.
Hello, the youth. Allah, Allah. Allah, Allah, the youth. Allah, Allah.
Allah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, our protocol of death. My name is Jokel Standen Yoma. I'm the principal at Onaa Secondary School. I became a principal at the age of 29 in 2011. And I've been a principal for over 14 years now. Yes. I'm currently the personal assistant to Honorable Balotu, the Conde, the principal. This is my Melissa. I was a principal at Onaa Secondary School. Melissa has dyslexia, if you know what that is. You know what that is? You don't know what that is? It's a learning difficulty. So Melissa, when she was in grade 12, she used to come to my office, like say, I'm going to UNAM. Melissa, with her learning disability, passed grade 12 with flying colors, went to UNAM. She graduated with a degree in community development. Yes, community development. Now she works for the UN. Kindly give a round of applause to Melissa. With just a few words, Melissa, just shortly, short, just a few words of encouragement to the youth. All right.
Good morning, everyone. Such an honor to be in the midst of other young people. Like I said, my name is Melissa, and I'm no extraordinary young person, just a young person that seeks opportunity in the midst of my learning difficulty called dyslexia. I come from an art secondary school, a school supposed to be for excellence, and I am a product of what I would say when you give a person like me an opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Leoma, for accepting my application, though I couldn't even write my name properly on my application form. On International Youth Day, I would honestly just want to tell other young people that we should be prepared for the rooms we claim we are intended for. I'm very intentional with youth development and community development, and that is why after completing my grade 12, I went to study lifelong learning and community development. The dream was always the UN, but I didn't believe that people like me would enter such places. And today I work for a UN agency called UNICEF. Honestly, young people, the world is in your hands. Go for your dream, take the next step. Africa, Namibia, and the world is not prepared for when young people are inclusive to others, especially those with disability or from marginalized communities. So let's be kind, be humble, and go for your dream. Thank you.
And there we had it from Melissa, talking about how the world is sometimes really not inclusive or really kind and accepting to those with disabilities. But regardless, she defied all odds and went on to pursue her dreams. And particularly the story is brought to you, for you who, of course, are passing through a particular situation, and perhaps finances is not really on your side. You as a youth, things are not going so well. But what I would encourage you on this International Youth Day is that you defy all odds. Make sure that you play your part and make sure that you really go out there and knock on the doors, and you never know, the right ones will open. That is the message we are communicating to the youth today on International Youth Day, for you to take up your space and for you to be prepared for when the door is opened unto you, and not be mumbling when the door is actually opened because you have not prepared in the time when you were supposed to be getting prepared. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here. This is On The Radar Analysis. We're talking about youth on this International Youth Day. But I'll be back with more voices of the youth when we do return. Stay tuned.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now we're speaking to the youth themselves. We have in studio on air Valmarie Janje, who is the chairperson of the Karas Regional Youth Forum. Good afternoon, Valmarie, and welcome to On The Radar Analysis.
Good afternoon, Miss Happy.
Yeah, so today is International Youth Day, and Namibia celebrates. And of course, you were one of the master of ceremony for this event. Just exactly what is your takeaway in regards to Namibians having to celebrate International Youth Day?
I think it's a big, huge privilege for young people to be celebrated.
Mm.
And I think it was really a privilege to be a part of it, to be the master of ceremonies. I am honored to have spent the day with such youthful and vibrant young leaders. We have been inspired and educated about opportunities and all that is ahead for us as young people.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, as the chairperson of the Youth Forum, of the Karas Regional Youth Forum, what do you advocate for in terms of youth inclusivity?
So definitely a region as Karas, where we have all different tribes, all different kinds of young people, we really try to make sure that all youth organizations, Because you see, National Youth Council is the umbrella of all youth organizations, meaning that youth who are marginalized are represented, youth that are interested in the environment, youth that are business-minded, all young people are represented, and we advocate literally for everyone to be, to feel included, to just mm-hmm. be a part of the development of the youth.
Mm-hmm. There's something that I personally was inspired of by Melissa, her story, defying all odds and still going on to achieve her goals. What is that particular thing that inspired you today at the celebration, Valmarie?
For me, definitely Melissa was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
She really inspired me. I was inspired by so much that happened today. I was inspired by the three young learners that told the minister about their dreams and aspirations.
Yeah.
I was inspired by the school principal that became a principal. It's such a young age, so much, just to show us really that young people can take up space. Doesn't matter the age,
Absolutely.
Doesn't matter the disability or anything. You are not limited, and young people should really see that today. The minister has given us multiple, not just Namibian leaders, but right around the world, of young people taking up space, which is really, really inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, hey? Yeah, that's quite interesting. And for me, that I do appreciate everything that really just took place, for the youth being encouraged and being motivated to really take up space, as you rightly say, the right day. Do you think, in Namibia, platforms are created for the youth to rightfully take up their place? What more needs to be done?
So I do think that platforms are there in place for mm-hmm. young people to take up space.
Mm-hmm.
But I also do think that when it comes to the recognition and acknowledgement of young people, that more can be done. If you take, for instance, today we had a high table, right?
Yeah.
And most of the people on the high table were either outgoing youth or, like we call them, upper youth or expired youth. Some of them were also just right adults, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And the minister took a bold initiative by calling one of the young leaders and giving her a space on the high table, mm-hmm. which for me, I loved it.
Mm.
It means that young people are being acknowledged,
mm-hmm.
young people are being recognized,
mm-hmm.
and even if others didn't, people like the Deputy Minister, Honorable Dino Valotti, clearly made a bold statement by saying there's not enough young people here, I'm calling someone and I'm putting her right in between the people at the high table.
Mm-hmm. I do like that approach, and the fact that he was also sitting in the crowd with the young people, hey?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Valmarie, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar Analysis. We do appreciate your insights with us.
Thank you so much, Ms. Happy. Have a great day.
Okay. And now we'll be engaging another youth also who was at the event, but shortly after the commercial break.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. And as I promised, we are engaging yet another youth. Now we're speaking to Christoph Ndengu, who is the SLC Vice President at the UNAM Hage Geingob campus. And he too was one of the master of ceremonies. Good afternoon, Ndengu, and welcome to On the Radar Analysis.
Thank you so much for having me. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, listeners across.
Mm-hmm. What do you want to grace us with today, right here on air, as we're talking about International Youth Day being celebrated today?
I think something that actually really speaks up for me or stands up for me, out for me today was the theme, All in All.
Mm-hmm.
It was a theme that was centered on local youth actions for the SDGs and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
As for the longest time, youth have been missing conversations that were centered around SDGs.
Mm-hmm.
Walk into a room and more than half of that don't even know what that means, what it abbreviates, and what its importance in terms of youth participation.
Yeah.
So I'm just glad it was highlighted today out of all days.
Okay. And I think, taking note, I do realize that you're a firm advocate of SDGs, eh? Kindly tell us or educate us, what are those sustainable development goals and why is they so quite touchy to you?
So the sustainable developmental goals are goals that are not set at the national level. They're not even continental. These are national goals that have been intercontinental, rather, should I say, that have been set. It's a group of 17 goals that are centered around making sure that we live sustainably for the future. We are trying to address almost every concern, every problem that hinders the current age right now, as to not affect us in the near future. So all the 17 SDGs have a specific element, a specific component of our lives that touches from climate change to health, to education, to, what is this?
End poverty, end hunger, zero hunger.
Mm-hmm. All of these things, zero hunger. So they are really a group of guiding principles, should I say, on which we build starting to build so many policies, so many decisions in a way that highlights these SDGs, in a way that puts them up there, and we make sure that they are well highlighted to say that these are very important things that we should now start looking into with a keen eye.
Yeah. Now, with the theme being local youth actions for SDGs and beyond, just exactly how would you see youth should themselves make themselves available for this inclusivity in order to help reach the SDG goals? I mean, we only have 4 years and a few months to actually 2030.
So my chat will always be to include ourselves in conversations. We really need to be invited to a table in order to air our voices. We don't need wear a suit in and go to parliament to table a policy. Youth advocacy should start at a grassroots level. It should include you having a voice in your family already. It should include you having a voice in your community, in your churches. If you see someone vaping and you instantly just say, hey, do you know what that does to the ozone? Do you know what you do you know what that does to the next person? In a nutshell, you're already including so many SDGs in that one statement alone. So youth championing SDGs does not necessarily mean that we are going to go on live air and we are going to talk about SDGs and what is going to happen. It means we are going to start taking charge in the moment, trying to address everything as it comes, however way we can address it with the platforms that we are given.
Nice. I appreciate that. In fact, it's as if you're saying that we should be bold. The youth should be bold to actually take up space, hey? And not just wait for the platform to be handed to them.
Exactly. I'm coming from the recently concluded Commonwealth Youth Summit, and so many speakers also centered around just that. You shouldn't wait for a seat, your name to be called to the seat of at the table. Make your own seat. Make your own table. Have a discussion amongst yourselves. And you should be bold enough. You should stand up long before they even mention your name.
Yeah.
And that's judgments.
Okay. Do you think that youth are prepared? I mean, should doors be opened for them now that they have been longing for them to be opened, and the inclusivity that they have longed to preach and echoed their voices to be heard on many ears of leaders? Should those doors actually be opened right now, even this very hour? Do you think youth are prepared to take up those spaces?
Of course. Youth have always been prepared to take up space. Okay. It's not a matter of time. It's not a matter of now in terms of whatever government is in charge. Youth have always been in a position to take up space, to take up and to take charge. Okay. I feel like for the longest time we've sidelined youth and made decisions for them, decisions that directly affect the youth had no say in at all. So we are now starting to see, say Namibia, for example, we are including so many youth, so much youth in parliament, in decision making, and we are seeing the significant changes and the significant policies these people are now starting to table. Things that could have been tabled long back had we been given the opportunity in the very beginning. So I feel like Namibian youth, now speaking in the Namibian capacity, we are ready. We've been ready. Mm-hmm. And if anything, our government is really showing us that it is ready to allow us to step in. It is ready to listen to us. And this is being shown in so many ways, mm-hmm. including, of course, this new the fund, the government fund, funding the youth-led initiatives. I mean, that in itself is the government proving to us that they are ready and they understand that the youth is ready.
Mm. I appreciate that, Nengo. Now, a message to two sets of people, a message from Dengu to the leaders of Namibia and a message from Dengu to the youth, to every Namibian youth out there.
Starting off with our leaders, we see what you're doing. We see where you want to move Namibia. We see that we are not the leaders today, tomorrow rather. We are the leaders of today. And we see exactly what it is that you are doing for us. We appreciate. Continue to inspire, continue to provide that platform, continue to give us that opportunity to prove ourselves even better. Because if we do not shape and nurture the young right now while early, it's going to be very difficult to repair broken adults and broken societies when we could have gotten a chance to do that right now. To the youth out there, it shouldn't be, and one of the speakers today actually did mention it. It shouldn't be, it shouldn't take the 12th or the 11th of August for us to celebrate each other, to celebrate our achievements, to celebrate and to champion initiatives, to table ideas. It shouldn't take that. National Youth Day should be a thing that happens almost every day. In your own capacity, take time to just reflect what it is that you can do for your country, what it is that your country has done for you, what it is that you want to improve, what it is that you stand for, and make these things known already now, whenever. It doesn't need to take a specific or a special day to do just that. And if anything, we are brave, we are bold, we are capable, and opportunities are being handed to us in our palms. We have the platform. It's really just for us to start using them, to start using that platform. Things should stop being rhetorics and things we just say out of mouth. These things should start taking tangible action. We should start taking action towards the things that we really speak about, because we are that bright and we are that committed to making sure that the future of Namibia is preserved, not for us, maybe not for our children, but it goes on. The future of Namibia is preserved, but it's preserved by the youth.
We are brave, we are bold, and we are, able, we are brave, and we are bold, right?
Exactly.
Okay. And that's the word of the voice of Christoph Ndengu talking to the youth. Youth, I hope that you have been inspired. Ndengu, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader Analysis.
No, thank you so much. The pleasure is all mine.
Okay. Okay. And there you had it from Christoph Ndengu, who is the vice president of SRC at UNAM Hagigingo campus. Now, of course, this is On the Radar Analysis. Perhaps you are a youth sitting right in the corner of somewhere or basking under the sun and tuned into On the Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. And you want to partake? Well, the studio number is 0832888401. Please come through in A opinions or contributions and tell us what international Youth Day actually means for you. And did you know that the cutoff age for being a youth is actually the age of 35, eh? Yeah. So if you are 35 and beyond, you're still considered a youth. Now, that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On the Radar Analysis. I still have more coming your way, so stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not pick up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. Like I told you, you are tuned into On The Radar Analysis. I'm here to keep you company until 14:30. This is On The Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, of course, let's move over to economic indicators and trading economics. We're starting off with the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now, today, one US dollar will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 72 cents, while one pound sterling will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 84 cents. One euro, on the other hand, will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 57 cents, while one Chinese yuan will get you 2 Namibian dollars and 47 cents. One Botswana pula will get you 1 Namibian dollar and 32 cents. One Nigerian naira will get you 0.012 Namibian dollars. And now we're shifting gears to trading economics. And of course, for today, in terms of trading economics, we're starting off with the annual inflation price in India. Now, the annual consumer price inflation rate in India fell to 1.55% in July of 2025. That is from 2.1% in the previous month. Now, firmly below the market consensus of a 1.76% to mark the ninth consecutive decrease in the inflation rate and only one basis point away from the series low in June of 2027. Now, it was the first time that the price growth fell below the Reserve Bank of India's wide tolerance band of 2% to 6% since 2019, reinforcing the view that the central bank may deliver another interest rate cut this year. Now, the slowdown was owed to a second drop in prices of food amid a plunge in cost of vegetables. In the meantime, inflation has slowed for transport and communication and remained relatively resilient for housing for housing at 3.17% versus 3.24%. That is from the previous month. Consumer prices were 0.9% higher. Latvia recorded a trade deficit of 464.4 million euros in June 2025, widening from 332.1 million euros in the same month a year ago, as imports rose while exports fell. Year-on-year, imports increased by 5.4% to 1,862.3 million euros, mainly driven by higher purchases of machinery and mechanical appliances, vehicles and their equipment at 12.3%, and chemical industry and related products at 9.7%. Imports grew from the EU at 5.2% and other countries at 26.9%, while it declined sharply from CIS countries at minus 64.9%. The annual inflation rate in Portugal rose to 2.6% in July of 2025 from 2.4% in the previous month, aligned with the flash estimate. It was the highest level of inflation since the start of the year. Prices accelerated for unprocessed food at 6.2% versus 4.7%, making up for the steady inflation rate in processed food at 1.3%. Now, in return, the core inflation index, which excludes energy and unprocessed food product components, rose to 2.5% from 2.4% in June. Mining production in South Africa rose by 2.4% over a year in June 2025, accelerating from an upwardly revised 0.3% increase in May and marking the second consecutive month of growth. Now, figures exceeded market estimations of a 1.4% advance, the largest positive contributors were PGMs, which rose 3.0% and contributed 1.0 percentage point. Now coal up to 3.7% and contributing 0.8 percentage point, and chromium ore, which increased by 9.0%, adding a 0.5 percentage point on overall growth. Now, on a seasonally adjusted monthly basis, mining output went up by 0.2% after an upwardly revised 3.9% surge in the month before. Mining production grew by 3.9% in the second quarter of 2025, compared with the first quarter of 2025. Still in South Africa, gold production in South Africa rose 3.1% year on year in June 2025, marking the second consecutive monthly increase and accelerating from a 1.5% rise in the previous month. Now, the uptick contributed a positive 0.4 percentage points to the overall year on year growth in total mining output. Meanwhile, unemployment in South Africa rate rose further to 33.2% in the second quarter of 2025. That is from 32.9% in the first quarter and slightly above market estimates of 33%. Now, it was the highest jobless rate since the second quarter of 2024, as the number of unemployed individuals increased by 140,000 to a one-year high of 8.4 million, while employment rose by 19,000 to 16.8 million. Next, the expanded definition of unemployment, which includes those discouraged from seeking work, eased to 42.9% in the second quarter from 43.1% in the first quarter. Now, the number of persons employed in the formal sector increased by 34,000, while employment in the informal sector declined by 19,000. The largest job gains were recorded in trade, a plus 88,000, private household at plus 28,000, and construction at plus 20,000, while employment declined in community and social services at minus 42,000, agriculture at minus 24,000, finance at minus 24,000, transport at minus 15,000, utilities at minus 6,000, and manufacturing at minus 5,000. Now, the youth unemployment rate, which measures job seekers between 15 and 24 years old, eased to 62.2% from 62.4%. And that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. This is On The Reader Analysis. We take a break here and visit the marketplace. When we do return, we shall be bringing you news beyond the borders of Namibia.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Let's start off in South Africa, where the Home Affairs building fire is contained and SAPs weigh in on Gemmystone evictions.
All right, we'll actually not go to Darwin as yet. We're going to shift our focus and take you back to that protest where SABC News reporter Calvin Dluta is, where residents were being evicted from those low-cost housing from the low-cost housing homes. Let's just check in with Calvin quickly.
And good afternoon to you again, Mfundo, and to our SABC viewers at home. We are back at the location that where we started. And now I have to say that Deputy Police Commissioner, provincially, Fred Gekana, is addressing the media. That is where we need to move now so that we can be able to listen in to that media briefing. And we two people have been arrested here in relation with what transpired today. Deputy Commissioner is now addressing the media. We will have to go to that media briefing so that we can be able to also join in and listen to what is being said.
There are many court orders that have been issued, but now joined with SAPC, we decided that today we are going to execute. When we're executing it, when we arrive here, the streets were closed, people burned the property, were closing street, burning and damaging private property. But there was a proper consultation. From the 26th up until now, the sheriff of the court came in with police officers, with precinct and the local police station. They issued documentation to people, but there was this mentality of defying. Defying because some of them, they don't qualify. As I'm talking to you now, we've been able to recover uniform that belong to JMPT, EMPT, and some of the officials that are earning high salary that are not supposed to be there. They are staying there. When we came in there, expensive car, we're moving out, people were there, but we said we're not going back, we're going to execute it today. It's plus minus 422 households or units that are supposed to be executed, plus minus 1,000 families, let me say so, that are supposed to be executed. But the process now is under control. We are busy evacuating them, making sure that there's law and order. You see, but proper consultation was done. As I'm talking to you now, it's August. The court order was issued on the 26th of June. You see, and before that, there were engagement. In fact, we're not even moving everyone there. There are those that are paying that are not being removed. You see, we'll go and see that still. But those that are defying, and those that are defying are people who are not supposed to stay in those low-cost housing. You see, when you check, it's part of other low-cost housing that are taking place in Jimmy. Some of the people here are renting those properties. Some are owning 2 or 6 units that belong to the state. They decided to take people from outside, people, foreign nationals, that are staying there, renting, doing everything, pocketing the money. It is them, they are those part of the instigators, as General was talking, that we have identified. But our people are on the ground, are processing. We are still identifying some of the culprits. We know even the committee that is instigating all these things. But we'll be processing and make sure that on afternoon we'll be giving you proper details of the number of the arrests and the number of people that have been evacuated, or the amount of people, sorry, that have been evicted in the building.
Now, quarterly labor force survey shows South Africa's unemployment rate rose to 33.2%. Let's weigh in.
Unemployment has ticked up in South Africa. Releasing the quarterly labor force survey, Statistics South Africa reported that the official unemployment rate rose to 33.2% in the second quarter. That's compared to the 32.9% registered in the first quarter. StatsSA says the number of unemployed persons grew by 140,000 to 8.4 million, while the number of employed persons increased by 19,000 to 16.8 million. Discouraged work seekers decreased by 28,000, down 0.8%, while the number of people deemed not economically active for reasons other than discouragement remained unchanged in the second quarter compared to the first quarter. The expanded unemployment rate for the second quarter decreased by 0.2 percentage points, coming in at 42.9%. South Africa's unemployment has increased from 32.9% in the first quarter to 33.2% in the second quarter of 2025. Now joining us live for more on the jobs numbers is Johan Els. He's chief economist at Old Mutual. Good afternoon, Johan. Thank you very much for joining us on the program. Now, firstly, your reaction to the unemployment rate now increasing by that 0.3%, standing at 33.2% in the second quarter.
Good afternoon. It just highlights once again that South Africa's problem number one is the lack of higher economic growth. So we've had very dismal economic growth, and under those circumstances, it's absolutely difficult to make any inroads in getting that unemployment rate down. What was happening specifically, though, is with somewhat positive economic growth, we've seen that disillusioned job seeker number coming down a little bit. When people actually come back into the labor market, start actively looking for a job, they get counted as unemployed as per the official definition, and that's why the unemployment rate ticked up. But it comes down again to weak economic growth. And so we need to fix that. That's the only way how we're going to get that unemployment rate down over time.
Mm, and that seems to be what we're seized with, right? Fixing of the economy to ensure that it grows at a more decent rate. But what becomes of this economic growth or economic growth plans if we've been hearing of the 0.2% that could possibly be shaved off of our GDP with the 30% US tariffs that have been imposed? Where do we start in this whole instance? Because right now we have businesses that don't know if they can export. What will be the support structure that is offered by government?
There's a couple of points there. Of course, the trade tariffs will have a negative impact in terms of our GDP growth, but I think it's not a further shaving of that 0.2% off current forecasts. Most economists, Reserve Bank, Treasury, everybody's already adjusted their growth forecasts back in April when Trump's liberation tariffs were announced on the 2nd of April. So it's not a further shaving. It is impacted. We also need to remember that if we exclude precious metals exports, less than 5% of our exports go to the US. So it's not a significant overall economic effect. It is a specific effect in terms of motor vehicle exports, wine exports, citrus exports. So it will have some impact. But in terms of economic growth, we've done some things correctly already, too slow, of course, and we need to do a lot more. But in terms of the structural constraints on the economy, electricity was a big one, and we're busy fixing that. We're busy getting more private sector participation in areas of logistical nature where Transnet's volumes have been failing. So we've done electricity. We're busy working on logistics. We're busy working on these things. And as I say, we need to do more. But also the cyclical economy is kicking in. Low inflation and lower interest rates, that's helping consumer spending. And to some extent in the job numbers, we see that uptick in the trade sector. So the retailers, for instance, employing more people because we as consumers are spending more. Our ability to spend has been supported by lower inflation and lower interest rates. So there's some signs of green shoots in the economy that we should expect somewhat better growth down the line, thanks to lower inflation and lower interest rates and less structural constraints in the economy. But of course, we still need to do more to lift economic growth from that around 1% annual average over the last 16 years to more towards 3%, which is where we'll start to see more benefits.
Mm-hmm. You touched on private sector participation. With many of the political parties even going into election, most of them were talking about the need to involve the private sector a bit more, at least to use their own capital because government is so financially constrained. But that participation is not without opposition, because you still have those that would say that you cannot almost delegate or relegate to the private sector that which is the function of government in most instances. So there's always the school of thought that government has to fund everything in the economy. So what happens now when you've still got that tussle or the wrestling around ideology when it comes to greater participation of the private sector in ensuring that we stimulate our economy?
I think those arguments of starting to fail. Government hasn't got the capital, hasn't got the money, as you rightly said. The private sector has got that ability. So in areas where we all know that state-owned enterprises have been failing, the private sector can do those jobs better and more efficiently and more productively than government. And I think we've seen that significantly in the electricity sector. And now we're building into, as I said, other areas, logistics, water supply, the electricity grid, etc. So more and more those arguments are starting to fail because government simply cannot do that. The private sector's got the capability and the capital to do so. And that's the only way we're going to get out of this growth slump towards somewhat better economic growth over the medium term.
Mm-hmm. And then the argument that when you involve the private sector too much, we must remember that they are solely, or they solely exist for profit. So in most instances, you're going to see now the commodifying of certain functions, whether it be electricity, it might become more expensive, whether it's water provision, all of those. Does that argument hold?
To some extent, yes, you're right that the private sector will only get involved for profit motive. But that's where decent government regulation comes in. For instance, in the electricity sector, that's a great example where government and the regulator now wants to open up for competition. Eskom is still resisting that, but competition means you have more electricity available, but they have to compete. And that competition means downward pressure on prices. It's no longer going to be the monopoly that we had in terms of Eskom. And that's where that regulation, better regulation, cutting off red tape, allowing competition, comes in, and that will put the downward pressure on prices. So in the future, we should have more electricity available at a cheaper price.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. And then just in closing, taking you back to the data itself, if we had to be more granular now, it showed that at least when it comes to gender, it shows that there's persistent gender imbalances where women continue to carry a heavier share of the burden of unemployment. I mean, they were standing at 35.9% compared to the 31.1% for men. What do you make of just those imbalances that continue to persist? Is it perhaps a stubborn economy that just doesn't empower women?
It's a difficult one. I suspect that with better economic growth, it's one tide that lifts all boats, that everybody will benefit from better economic growth. I'm not sure what the actual reason is behind that diversity between males and females. But that's, of course, a focus that we need to highlight going forward, that when we get better economic growth, we must focus on eliminating that imbalance there.
Mm-hmm. Johan, thank you very much for your insights this afternoon. Yeah. That's Johan Aus, Chief Economist from Old Mutual, speaking to us there.
Moving on to Zambia, slow horses threaten Zambia's Olympic chances.
The race to qualify for the 2026 Dakar Youth Olympic Games is gaining momentum in Zambia. In the sport of equestrian, athletes have been participating in the International Equestrian Federation FEI Wild Jumping Challenge, a key qualification platform for the global event. Over the weekend, Zambian equestrian hopefuls took part in the second round of the FEI Wild Jumping Challenge as they continue their bid to secure a spot at the Youth Olympics.
My end target would definitely be like to qualify for the Olympic Games and just represent my country and like let us be known for horse riding and all of that.
It's been so much fun. We've been training a lot, especially the past few months, trying to make it to Category A soon. And I've been spending a lot of time after school training just so I can make it, you know, I can do well at these competitions. And yeah,
it'll be everything. I mean, this is what everyone works towards. It's everyone's main goal, and it'll be huge for whoever goes.
The Youth Olympics will be a huge achievement because you obviously work for it for a very long time, as horses don't, like, it's not suddenly happen. You have to work for it. And yeah, it will be a big achievement.
Back in 2018, Banti Howard made history by becoming the first ever Zambian equestrian athlete to compete at the Youth Olympic Games, where she went on to win a bronze medal. With the 2026 edition of the Games being hosted on African soil for the first time, Howard is determined not only to qualify once again, but also to inspire and lead a new generation of young Zambian girls into the sport.
And, I mean, it's hard. We're against top African countries, but Zambia's going to give it a good go, and we have got the riders and the horses, and we've had the training to prepare.
Recognizing the importance of qualification, an expatriate equestrian coach has been brought in to provide expert training and guide the team toward meeting the Olympic standard.
They're at the same level as everybody else because they all have the same heart. They're on borrowed horses, so without a doubt, they're as good as any of the kids here in Europe. I think it's been also been heard of. They've gone to a few shows in Africa there, and then the feedback has been that the kids are saying, "Oh, these kids have improved."
Should qualification be secured, it will be the second time that Zambia will be sending a team of riders to the Youth Olympics. Chan Sakunda, ZNBC Sport, Lusaka.
Let's switch over to Cameroon, where Cameroon's robotics leader champions smart agriculture at World Robot Conference.
Well, CGTN spoke to Jacques Ion, president of Cameroon Robotics Association, on the significance of robotics development in Cameroon.
So, of course, we know that agriculture is a very vital part of Cameroon's economy. How is robotics technology helping to improve this sector?
Agriculture is, as you said, a very important part of our economy. Actually, agriculture can bring, bringing smart agriculture can be very helpful for a country to by boosting actually the production. So this is where robot can be very useful, very helpful when it comes to smart harvesting, crops monitoring. So that's the reason why we think that robotics is actually a very important point. Promoting smart agriculture in my country. Yeah.
And how can China and Cameroon work together on this?
Of course, yes. Of course, Cameroon is very open, and China has the knowledge, has the technology, and we have the we have the potential. And one of our greatest partner until today is China. So I think China and Cameroon can actually work together and promote a win-win cooperation.
Uganda is set to repatriate over 2,000 Sudanese refugees and improved conditions.
Uganda is set to repatriate over 2,000 Sudanese refugees who have voluntarily requested to return home, citing improved conditions in Sudan. The move comes amid mounting humanitarian pressure as Uganda hosts nearly 2 million refugees, the largest refugee population in Africa. CGTN's Michael Buleke reports.
Uganda's decision to repatriate more than 2,000 Sudanese refugees is part of a voluntary program requested by the refugees themselves. Officials say improving security in parts of Sudan has encouraged some to go back. But this small repatriation hides a much bigger challenge. By late July, Uganda was hosting 1.9 million refugees with around 600 new arrivals daily. And numbers are expected to reach 2 million by the end of this year. Most are fleeing conflict in South Sudan, DR Congo, and Sudan. Known for progressive refugee policies, such as granting land and access to public services, Uganda now faces an unprecedented funding crisis. Emergency support for refugees is expected to run out by September. This severe shortfall is forcing drastic cuts to vital services like food, healthcare, and shelter. The UN Refugee Agency warns that monthly aid per refugee has dropped from $16 to just $5, leaving many vulnerable to malnutrition, illness, and exploitation. UNHCR calls for urgent international support and long-term solutions to sustain Uganda's open-door approach and protect millions displaced by the conflict. Michael Baleke, CGTN, Kampala.
Meanwhile, Burkina Faso's smart device eases water rationing.
The search for water in Ouagadougou, resulting from cuts, is a nightmare for households in the Burkinabe capital. This situation forces women, like Gabri Bernadette, to often stay up late at night, standing vigil next to the taps so as not to miss the resource when it becomes available. But since the arrival of Tivuse, a small device installed near the tap which activates as soon as there is water, she no longer has to do so. The device automatically fills up her water containers, shutting down in the event of a water or power outage.
It was inconveniencing to fetch water during water cuts. It wasn't easy staying awake waiting for water or searching for it around the neighborhood. But since 2024, with the system, everything has really fallen into place. I no longer need to stay awake waiting for water. When the water comes, my barrel fills up, and when it's full, the system turns off the water.
Around 60% of the Burkinabe population is facing water supply cuts. The government says the rationing is due to increased demand caused by a heat wave that has hit the country. Some districts in the Burkinabe capital have gone for more than 3 days without water. Tivuse, which means go rest in the local Mori language, has eased their suffering. The device installed near the tap, right after the meter, was introduced last year by Asen Gambo, the CEO of an engineering company that specializes in water management.
Gambo wanted to end the daily reality of people spending hours waiting for water.
It was designed using local materials, and once installed on the network, it allows families to overcome water supply issues. When the system is connected to the tap, as soon as the water is cut off and the water comes on late at night, you no longer need to wake up to fill your containers. The machine does this easily without human intervention, and when your containers are full, it stops. It can fill up to 5 drums and 1 polytank.
So far, 19,000 users in the capital have installed the device in their household. The organization that set it up plans to roll it out in other parts of the country. It hopes more African countries, especially those in the north, that face water rationing, will start using the device. Tivu Say is assembled locally and has created jobs for locals and boosted Burkina Faso's economic growth. Caroline B., CGTN.
Senegal's economic plan relies on domestic funding.
Prime Minister Sonko is seeking $10 million in the next 3 years to fund his plan. His economic recovery aims to reduce the budget deficit to 3% of the GDP by 2027. These objectives are also part of the Senegal 2050 vision.
Très difficile pour le Senegal.
The various audits carried out today have revealed a cumulative deficit of 14%, with the public debt equivalent to 119% of gross domestic product. This is an extremely worrying situation for Senegal. More specifically, this represents a shortfall of 14% compared to the declared figure of 4.5% and an increase in public debt from 74% under the previous regime to 119%. Financing conditions are also becoming increasingly challenging.
The Prime Minister's recovery plan is based on reducing the standard of living, mobilizing domestic resources, reviewing public contracts, and implementing complementary financial strategies without recourse on debt. But that will mean all persons residing in Senegal will be subject to taxation. The plan has received mixed reactions.
I think we are in a financial recovery framework rather than an economic one. Instead of implementing an economic recovery policy, the government now seems to favor revenue accumulation by broadening the tax base. I say this because Senegal already experimented with this plan in 1979, and it contained errors. I think the same mistakes are being repeated today.
I think this plan is very good because it was designed by tax experts. The President of the Republic of Senegal is a tax and property inspector, as is the Prime Minister, Sonko. Within the Senegalese government, there are many people from the tax administration or economic experts as well.
Since the new government took power, companies have been struggling to survive because of the tax changes, which has led to a decline in their ability to thrive and remain competitive in the market. With regard to this endogenous recovery plan, I am not convinced that Mr. Sonko's plan is promising.
Sonko's recovery plan is also intended to deal with the $7 billion of hidden debt that Senegalese authorities believe was incurred by the former government. Following the government audit, the IMF stopped its $1.8 billion aid program for Senegal. However, Sonko's administration has criticized the IMF of failing to detect these debts.
The IMF sends audit and monitoring missions and then produces quarterly reports. So how did this debt not get noticed by this big bank for years? We were told that the accounts had been certified from 2019 to 2024. If the current authorities are now talking about hidden debts, they should be able to prove it.
The International Monetary Fund announced last week that it will send a mission to Senegal this month to address the country's hidden debt and begin preliminary discussions on a new loan program. Beryl Oro, CGTN.
World's first robot mall opens in Beijing, Etown, at Robot Conference.
In Beijing's Etown, there's a shopping mall dedicated entirely on robots. Let's see what's inside. Oh,
The giant robotic hands seem to announce the era of robots in display windows has officially arrived. More than 100 kinds of robots get lifetime care, integrating robot sales, spare parts supply, after-sales service, and information feedback. Every robot has a clear price tag.
Even among humanoid robots alone, the price gaps are staggering.
Two humanoid robots can carry price tags differing by tenfold. The manager noted that supply chain maturity and robotic functionality are critical factors behind pricing.
Most robots currently serve specialized functions. Their capabilities vary significantly across different contexts like industrial settings, medical applications, and daily companionship. These functional divergence directly impacts production costs.
I wonder, will factory owners actually spend 2 million RMB or like less than 300,000 US dollars on a logistics bot and a transport droid?
For B2B clients, the majority procure industrial or task-specific robots. Etown currently offers sales subsidies for these professional-grade machines. On the consumer side, chess playing and companion robots dominate on-site sales. Total revenue has reached nearly 15 million RMB or 2 million US dollars.
Are you really willing to purchase one like this or one like that?
Yes. We'll have a big demand in the future because it's a new area of new direction in the whole world, like cars.
A physical space makes robots visible and tangible, not just for interactive demos, but for side-by-side comparisons that simplify purchasing decisions. And finally, people can say, there's a place to buy robots. Liu Jiaxin, CGTN, Beijing.
Egypt's inflation drops from 38% to 13.9%.
Let's now go to one of our top stories today. Of course, Egypt's inflation slowed for a second month. Consumer price inflation there dropped to 13.9% in July, and that's from 14.9% in June. That, of course, is according to data from the country's statistics agency, CAPMAS. But let's delve into those numbers now with Dr. Bassem Hashad. He's an Egyptian economist and also an international consultant at the UNDP. Doctor, we're so grateful to have you on the show with us today. And, of course, we have to start off with the fact that inflation did fall from a record high of 38% in September 2023. Right now, it's at 13.9% in July. What does this signal about President Sisi's reforms? And I'd like to get your take on whether you think this progress is solely because of the IMF program and, of course, the IMF-mandated reforms.
Thank you so much, Ocho, for having me. Thank you so much, and thanks for your esteemed network, and thanks for the audience for following up this very interesting topic. From my side, I would say, it's a significant reduction in all what is related to inflation rate in Egypt recently, and I would say that the two main reasons behind this is two major or two core factors. The first factor is related to the economic reform and all these monetary and, I would say, also fiscal policies that Egypt applied since 2019 and forward. And also the second factor is related to the way, or let's say the methodology that is followed by the Central Bank of Egypt when it calculates the inflation rates. Actually, I would say the what's so-called the pool of calculation has changed from 2023 to 2025 for July. That's why most of the goods which were already included in the parcel or the pool of the goods has a little bit changed. That's why you can see a significant reduction in inflation rate in the last 2 years. These are the two main reasons, I would say, the major factors beside the other monetary and fiscal policies and the strategies applied. Where the reason behind this significant reduction.
Right. And speaking of monetary policy, we know Egypt's interest rate has been one of the world's highest so far. Does this inflationary deceleration give the central bank that scope to resume the monetary easing cycle? What do you expect from the central bank going forward?
Thank you so much. This is a very interesting question, and I thank you for it. Actually, in my point of view, this 24% of interest rate is very, very encouraging to all, I would say, in brackets, the hot money seekers, or what I say, the quick investors. These investors are looking and searching for, I would say, high risk, but high return in the same time benefit. And Egypt is the best fit solution for them when it comes to a 24% of interest rate to £1 deposited in the commercial bank or the central bank by one of the treasury bills or investing in lending the Egyptian government. That's why I would say the appetite of the investors are very much high to the Egyptian economy or the Egyptian monetary interest rates, since it gives them what can what cannot any else economy could give. This is why they are seeking for lending and borrowing the Egyptian government for this reason.
Right.
Al Jazeera slams Israeli strike as targeted assassination of journalists.
This is the immediate aftermath of an Israeli attack on a tent outside the Al-Shifa hospital in eastern Gaza. Inside were five Al Jazeera journalists who were all killed. One of the victims, 28-year-old reporter Anas Al-Sharif, was tweeting about the attack just before he died. In one post, he says, "Breaking, intense, concentrated Israeli bombardment using fire belts is hitting the eastern and southern areas of Gaza City." One of his final posts read, "This is my will and my final message. If these words reach you, know that Israel has succeeded in killing me and silencing my voice." The morning after the attack showed the full extent of the damage, with fellow journalists still struggling to process what had happened.
The killing of our colleagues, the journalists from Al Jazeera, is a crime that was not the first of its kind. The occupation, from the beginning of the aggression, has killed tens of journalists, and this is a crime that the international parties must stand up to. And there must be a court case against the occupation for these crimes that are committed against our colleagues who convey the truth.
The attack was condemned by Al Jazeera. However, in a statement, the Israeli government said that Al-Sharif led a Hamas cell responsible for organizing rocket attacks on Israeli civilians and troops, claiming a press badge wasn't a shield for terrorism. The United Nations and others have said Israel had not provided credible evidence for these claims. The Chinese government has also given its reaction, saying that China opposed all moves that harm civilians and condemned violent moves targeting correspondents. Al-Sharif is just the latest Al Jazeera employee to have been killed by Israeli forces during the conflict in Gaza.
Well, they include cameraman Samir Abu Dhaka, who was killed in December 2023. Reporter Ismail Al-Ghul and his cameraman, Rami Al-Rifi, were also killed in August 2024.
With that being said, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reader Analysis. Stay tuned for the Onkon Anadingi program brought to you by Lucy Shimi. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day.
Great news! Imbert just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imbert? Get all exclusive features for just $36 a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is
Eagle FM Media House. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwe po yomo programa detu moambo dengera selma onara heta tuimwe datu datu heari hamano tano oliaj Eagle FM the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-4000.